Michelle Pfeiffer.
Michelle Pfeiffer.
Michelle Pfeiffer.
Michelle Pfeiffer.
Well, Mr. Pfeiffer.
I think I left my chemistry book. Oh, there it is. I left it here last period of my gym class.
I'm saving up for a new convertible.
I'm Jennifer Bracey.
Jennifer? I'm Tom Butterfield from Raytown.
Oh, welcome to Marshall.
Thank you.
Well, I better get going. I'll see you later.
See you later.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Pfeiffer Fridays, where we walk you through the films of one Michelle Pfeiffer, and every F word automatically has a silent P. I'm Michael McLean.
And I'm Jerry Downey.
And today we are covering 1981's The Children Nobody Wanted, starring Fred Lane, Matt Clark, Anne Haney, Barbara Barry, Noble Willingham, and of course, La Pfeiffer as Jennifer Bracey. And now, Jerry, I imagine this was playing in your house all the time growing up.
Yes, this forgotten television movie from 1981 was on constant rotation when I was born in 88.
Yeah.
Same in your household?
Yeah, I mean, it was because, I mean, my grandmother was no stranger to Hallmark movies. So we had, you know, The Secret Garden and we had this.
Did y'all have The Secret Garden with Maggie Smith? Is that the one we're talking about?
So we did have that one because my grandmother loved that story so much. So we had that. I never watched it though, but I loved the Hallmark movie of The Secret Garden. For some reason, that was the one she watched up more often.
I've not seen the Hallmark version. I was raised with Dame Maggie's.
You were raised right, it seems. I don't know. But no. In all seriousness, never seen this, never heard of it.
And we should probably clarify up front that we are doing only two of Michelle's TV forays, one of which is this one, which is technically her last television movie that she did before going on to leading star status with Grease 2, as we will get into later in the episode. And then her next television movie after this, which is 2017's Wizard of Lies. Yes. So taking a quick tangent into the realm of TV, which is where Michelle got her start, and doing two of those before we get to our literal final feature film.
Yeah,
it's coming. But yeah, we sort of went round and round about TV movies, knowing we were wanting to do Wizard of Lies, and decided we wanted to get a taste of Baby Michelle's TV movies. And this one seemed to be the one that she mentions most in interviews that seemed to have sort of, if not lasting impact, stays in her memory more when she talks about her TV movies. And again, was the last one she did for years before going back to Wizard of Lies for an actual full-length TV film.
Yeah. It's interesting, I didn't know anything about Tom Butterfield. This is the story of Missouri's first foster parent who was both unmarried and still considered a minor in the state. He was 19 years old when he kind of took the first young boy under his wing and gave him a home. It definitely has that inspirational, like kind of, like we said earlier, like it has that Hallmark film quality to it. That's telling you an inspirational story that's not going to go too deep into the ethics of the whole situation that he was living, that he was working with. We're not going to get too in depth with his relationship with Michelle's character. You're going to kind of have the typical beats of conflict and resolution. And it feels like a format that I don't see anymore in TV movies, maybe because I don't watch Hallmark movies anymore. I have to say, I have not seen a Hallmark Christmas movie, but I haven't seen many of movies like this anymore that are made for TV. They're definitely different.
And I think that's just the changing of the times. Like, I think this was back in a time where there was a clear delineation between miniseries, which were like the good TV,
mm-hmm.
versus a TV movie, which sort of had that corny, lower quality feel to it. Because there's definitely a difference between something like this and something like Roots.
Yeah.
You know, and how it has lasted in the cultural zeitgeist. And I think that's a very clear delineation, is if you wanted the solid acting and the solid story and sort of what you would go to for a feature film, you waited for a miniseries, and that was a TV event.
Yeah, it's just miniseries feel like more event TV than TV movies.
And TV movies were sort of that movie of the week, lower mm-hmm. lower budget, lower expectations, in this case based on a true story that you just sort of want to get out to the masses in as sweet and earnest a fashion as you can.
Definitely. See, and it's kind of hard to judge it on. I really can't say, you know, this was good, this was bad. This was made with a specific model in mind and for a specific audience, and it's just tough to be like, to pick out really like the flaws, because what's really the point of it?
You can't necessarily grade this one on the same rubric you would a feature film, even something as early as Hollywood Nights or Falling in Love Again. Like, we can still compare those to Dangerous Liaisons or Batman, because aside from the year they were made, they have essentially the same rubric.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they are made with the same mentality in mind that this is going to be a theatrically released film.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas it's very clear that this one is not. It feels like the driving force behind this one is just getting the story seen.
Mm-hmm.
And this was the easiest way possible to do so. So yeah, no, you're absolutely right. It is very hard to grade this, especially as a movie. I think it's a little bit easier to sort of talk about Michelle in comparison to her other performances. I think that's an easier conversation to have in terms of where she'd fall in our rankings, where that's concerned.
Yeah.
But yeah, it feels unfair grading this one against a movie. It's odd.
Yeah. But yeah, like, I thought it's definitely a watchable TV movie.
Sure.
Just for the fact that you just want to know how this guy was able to make this work and give these kids a home. I guess by way of a little plot synopsis, when he's 19, he arrives in Marshall, Missouri for college. And one of his college credits that he has to get is working at the state hospital. It's a pretty rundown, poorly run establishment. And he notices that there's a little boy working there. Tom is like, that's not right. So I'm just going to take him under my wing. I want to just take care of him and kind of give him a better home than this. And so the hospital says, okay, trial period, but you have to bring him back because the social worker is going to wonder where he is. He's been placed here because he has nowhere else to go. And so he has this trial period with Joey, and they stay in Barbara Barry's attic, and she plays a nurse at the hospital. And when it comes time for him to give Joey back to the care of the hospital, he says, no, I can give this kid a better home than the hospital can. And he ends up becoming the first person in Missouri to become a licensed foster parent while still being unmarried and a minor. You know, he ends up finding another kid to take in, and more and more. They end up having 9 kids, all like 16 and under, and they end up finding a bigger house to live in too. Of course, they can't all live in Barbara Barry's attic. And he's just so in over his head. The social worker is kind of threatening to revoke his license, shut it all down, because there's too many kids. He's not allowed to have that many kids. The town is really against him running this establishment. They kind of think it's a establishment of ill repute, especially with Michelle being there. They kind of don't think that's a great place for her to be. And in speaking of Michelle, she takes up with Tom and helps him. She is his girlfriend. She helps just do various things around the house, helping to take care of the boys and keeping the house running, especially financially. And she begins to feel pretty neglected because, of course, Tom only has two hands, one pair of eyes, so he can't do it all. And yeah, it's just the rest of the film is him balancing his relationship, balancing keeping the home afloat. He runs into so much conflict with the town, with the social worker still, with his own charges, especially Dwayne, who's 16 and really wants to break out of this home and live on his own. And it ends in pretty much a George Bailey way. You know, he's strapped for cash and he just writes to every citizen of Marshall to please chip in some money so I can please be a full functioning foster home. And they do come through in the end. And he is able to keep this going. And they finally get their first girl at the end, which I was wondering. I was like, okay, this is a house for boys. Do they ever have girls? Seems kind of, can we be equal opportunity foster home? And for sure, first girl comes in. So it's very sweet. It's a little corny. It hits those marks that you expect out of a movie like this. But I got to hand it for Tom Butterfield. He's a better man than I. Don't think I could have ever done this by myself, essentially, with limited help.
Yeah, no, I'm glad you mentioned George Bailey because that ending especially gave me very It's a Wonderful Life vibes.
Did I leave anything out? I
think that sums it all up. I know this is odd to say. I feel like this movie kind of lights the fireworks up top. It feels like a lot of plot happens in the first 30 minutes or so.
Sure does.
Of a 100 minute hour 40 movie. And then after you get a lot of plot in half an hour, it kind of starts to feel rather repetitive, which is surprising because it kind of sets you up that this is going to be a very interesting and engaging story. Mm-hmm. Not that it isn't, but past that half hour mark, when you have an hour left, it's money trouble, new boy.
Money trouble,
racist crackers, more new boy.
Money trouble.
More racist crackers, money trouble. Yep. And it's just every time Tom has a meeting with somebody, the meeting starts with, well, you know, there's not people around here that don't like what you're doing. And it's just like, we know. God damn, you're like the fourth person to tell us that. And it just, you wish that it would go deeper on some of the other things, because as I said, it's just like, we know they're financially strapped. We know that there are crackers in this town that don't like having delinquents next door to them, so they think. Tell me more about him. Like, I want to know more about him. I would like to know. I was really kind of hoping, I know the focus was on the house, but having more of a primary focus on like Joey, who's the first little boy that he kind of saves, and having that sort of be a primary home base. It felt like in order to get the story to the ending they needed to in the time they had, it stayed surface level when it didn't necessarily need to.
Yeah.
And so I thought for a story that does seem very compelling and interesting, since it is a true story, I wish that they had decided to dig a little deeper on certain things and keep me engaged with the characters rather than just trying to get me from plot point to plot point.
I agree with you about that, putting like chalking the first 30 minutes full of plot, because I think in the first 10 minutes, I think he gets the job at the hospital, meets Jennifer, decides that he wants to take Joey under his wing because Joey is being mistreated, and like takes him to live in Barbara Barry's attic. That all happens like within the first 10 minutes, by the first commercial break.
Yeah.
And I was like, whoa, I checked the time to see like, we've got through so much. how far are we into this, by the way? It's like 10 minutes had gone by and I was like, oh shit. And yeah, I think by the time, I think they have the house by the 30 minute mark, which to me feels like a 45 halfway mark moment, because getting a house for these kids feels like a huge thing. And I almost thought, well, wouldn't it have been nice if we, maybe the movie ended with them getting the house together and we spent the rest of the time maybe focusing on, maybe, yeah, like maybe focusing on Joey, focusing on Tom and Jennifer's relationship, how they're building that together. Maybe some more backstory on Tom. We know that he was basically abandoned as a child. Maybe, yeah, dig a little deeper in that. There's got to be trauma there that he's got to resolve more. Because for the most part, you know, that was only 6 years. He's been abandoned for 6 years, essentially. His family abandoned him since he was 13. There's still a lot going on in there that has probably not been processed. So yeah, dig deeper into the psychology of this guy, you know? And yeah, as much as, you know, it seemed like they were so strapped and it was going to be tough, show a little bit more of the hard Scrabble stuff. I can't imagine that, you know, it sure has seemed like a lot of miracles came through for him, but I have to think that there was so much more difficulties that he faced. So yeah, it does feel very surface level. And especially when it comes to Michelle, she dependably digs deeper herself than what she's given. But yeah, I wish they'd maybe just explored that way. Michelle could have had more to work with, explore the two of them more.
Yeah, because she is the supportive girlfriend. That's the role Jennifer is in this movie. But I think it does show some very interesting sides of Michelle's acting capabilities. Mm-hmm. Just sort of trying to think back to how we responded to her first three. Yeah. Because this would have been the same release year as Charlie Chan. And it kind of just has that same charm we really responded to even in her minor scenes in Hollywood Nights.
Yeah.
Just sort of having enough of a know-how to elevate something and make it feel natural. Because she doesn't, I will give her this, she really doesn't seem to be resting on her laurels, considering how repetitive her material gets in the back half, because she's kind of there to be a pseudo mother figure to the boys and then get on Tom's case about how the books aren't coming together and they need this amount of money, and the amount of money just keeps going up every scene she has. And she always sort of seems to come at it from a different direction.
Yeah.
You're not watching the same scene over and over again. There's anger in one to resignation in another. She always seems to be very careful that she's not villainizing Jennifer, which I appreciate, because some of that dialogue, especially at the top when she's really having to come to terms with, I love this guy, but I don't really want to be his, you know, looking after these kids right now. She even has the problem with that when it's just Joey, just one kid, that she's like, I'm 19. This is not what I wanted with my life. And she never does. She makes those decisions seem natural and founded, like you would expect a 19-year-old to do in that situation where she really wants to be with the guy she loves, but is really pissed off that she's being neglected for a kid.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, I appreciated that she was still able to elevate this into something more than it was on the page. And I think this is a better performance from her than Falling in Love Again at minimum. And she certainly has more to do in this than she did in Hollywood Nights.
Yeah, for sure. It's I compared it most to Falling in Love Again. It's the supportive girlfriend. It's more of in that vein to me. The first thing I thought of when thinking of her. Although it seems like all her first three, it seemed like at the beginning of her career, she was having to balance between a good girl, bad girl dichotomy in her first few roles, like having to.
Certainly when it came to her TV work.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it's like at least the ones we've talked about, she definitely, this is falling into the nice girlfriend, charming girlfriend role. I feel like with Charlie Chan falling in love again, Hollywood Nights, maybe this one seems like that's where we find her in this part. There was hints, there's my one of my favorite lines that she had that she delivered really well to me, that, and maybe you can explain this better, the way why I responded to it. But she said, "I'm the only 19-year-old in the country with 9 boys. Kind of one of her first scenes where she's really feeling frustrated by how the books aren't lining up. And then she, again, speaking of the repetitiveness, she has kind of the same scene again where she says, you know, you don't think you have support? You know, what have I been doing? Or is that the same scene that I'm talking about? I feel like there's...
I think that's the same scene.
Well, then never mind. It's just, but it to me, it's like, oh, that's the way she delivers that and takes that speech and really makes it her own and delivers it in a way that I've never heard that kind of that speech delivered before. You know, how many times have we heard that supportive, frustrated girlfriends have these lines before? Yeah. But to me, especially that line, I'm the only 19-year-old in the country, felt different to me. It just felt like, oh, there flows more knowledge there. Yeah, I don't know how to describe it, but the way she says, like, oh, that's a really different way of delivering this to me. It speaks to maturity.
Yeah, she has a lot of very raw deliveries in this one that actually work well mm-hmm. for the character. Like, I think the fact that she is still so new and unpolished actually work in this character's favor mm-hmm. because it feels real. She's not that much older than 19 at this point to begin with. So yeah. It feels like you're getting a very natural response from her. Mm-hmm. Actually, the line I wrote down that I loved for her was the later scene where it's her only attempt where she actually does leave for a very small stretch of time and she's packing her suitcase. And she sort of says along the same lines of, I'm not really needed here anymore. So I need to go. And Tom starts talking about, oh no, you know how much the boys love you. And she just looks him straight in the face and says, I wasn't talking about the boys, Tom. And again, there's just a very matter of factness to that delivery when it could come off as so overwrought. Mm-hmm. It's like, for the tone this movie carries, I feel like there are a lot of pitfalls she could have fallen into in overdoing some of this dialogue, and mm-hmm. she never does. It's just a very smart performance for the environment she's in.
Yeah, and she's able to really bring forth that love that she feels for these kids, for Tom. I always love it just watching her work with kids. I'll always love it. It's just the best. I think it's when we're like right at the beginning when she's first saying, when it's still just Joey in the mix, you know, she gets down at his level. She waves goodbye like this. I'm kind of doing the wave she does. And yeah, just warmed my heart, just touched me so much, because that's a woman who clearly loves kids and knows how to interact with them. So many actors feel like can't summon that kind of compassion like Michelle can.
I wrote that down too, that car wash scene with Joey. I was just like, oh, this is early Michelle mom. I'm digging it. I like this a lot.
And even at the end, when we've gone full It's a Wonderful Life, she's giving us fully Donna Reed. The way she says Merry Christmas with the heart in her throat, and she comes over to him and just kind of mouths I love you to him. To me, that touches me more than just a shot of like Fred Lane's face, you know, oh my God, the Marshall came through for me. That did nothing for me. What did it for me was seeing her just verklempt by the town's gratitude.
Yeah.
Generosity, I mean, her gratitude, she's verklempt. She's just so grateful by their generosity. And that really spoke to a very, just an actress who's continued to mature in her abilities.
Yeah.
You know, that she's able to just convey that.
It also had to have been at least somewhat easy to be in love with Fred Lane.
Oh God, beautiful man.
I was about to say, you don't often text me during movies to talk about how pretty one of the guys is.
I sure did. I said, I gotta say it. And I just had very unholy thoughts during some of those I was like, I shouldn't want to go live in that boy's home. I'm too old to live there. But man, I want him to be my daddy.
I could look 16.
Yeah, I'll shave. I'm short enough.
What did you think of him in this movie? But besides the attractiveness.
Did I really think much of besides that? I know I'm trying to think. I'm like, huh, was I really digging that much deep besides how cute he looked? It's the role of a savior. I sometimes think those roles can be very blah. I kind of tend to focus on the people around the savior sometimes in these kind of movies. But very compassionate. Really, he must have had a great time working with those boys on set. And I'm sure they really enjoyed him as well. It seems like they picked the right person to connect with those kids and to put forth the fact that he really loved being around, especially young boys. I'm thinking of this scene where one of the boys that he adopts, Zim, is a little black boy, and he wants to enroll the kids in school, but the race crackers say, no, this black, I won't allow this boy in school. And it's a shot on Zim and how heartbroken he is or how embarrassed he is that there's this scene in front of the school. And Fred just puts his arm around his neck and kind of squeezes his neck a little bit, really compassionately. Again, that touched me, being like, you know, that's not a thing you can really direct an actor to do. That comes from a place of really kind of love and compassion that you have for the people you're taking care of. Like, yeah, just really related to these kids, loved them. And that's really all he needed to do. He's not really asking to delve into the trauma of his past. You can tell he loves Jennifer. That came across. But yeah, I think he does what the role requires.
I would agree with you. I think he does his job. I think he's the one that gets the brunt of that repetitiveness we talked about.
Sure.
Because there's only so many ways he can react to that same fucking conversation over and over again.
Yeah.
But I think he does his job. I think he is the reason the story feels so compelling at the top is because of how much energy he's putting into it, which I think is why you notice sort of the decline at the back with how much they pack into that short first third, really, and how much he's selling it and sort of pulling you into the story and making it mean something. So yeah, I think he does a good job.
I really enjoyed also Anne Haney's performance as the social worker. I think, is it Miss Lightheart?
Yes.
Couldn't quite hear it. There are some names that I could never quite catch. You know, I was going back and forth between, is his name Dwayne or Blaine? I kept on hearing both. I thought she was also, was she Mrs. Selner in Mrs. Doubtfire?
Yes.
That's what I was like, she looks like Mrs. Selner. And for sure she was. So she really is, she found her type.
Yeah.
Again, another wonderful social worker to add to her oeuvre. But she was really, again, felt like kind of a, you know, she's here to do her job. You can only have two kids and you got nine. I just thought her compassion as well was really nice. And I wonder if there was such a woman who gave him a shot and kept giving him a chance and being really generous with how I imagine how, would it be bureaucratic to say, it just feels like it's, I imagine that whole process of being a foster parent and making sure you have everything intact has to be just like insane.
Yeah, there's that one monologue she has, really the last time we see her, where she sort of tells him, okay, I'm well aware you're breaking my rules, but we're going to act like I don't know you're breaking my rules, and you've got a month to figure this out. But as part of her sort of sign off to him, she literally gives a rundown of everything he has to bring up to code, and that list is ridiculously extensive. So you really do get a sense through her character just how intense this process really is and what an undertaking this has to be to do it correctly in the eyes of the law/government.
But yeah, it's crazy. I just, because of course it makes absolute sense. The list that she ran down seemed really extensive, but also, yeah, Yeah, because if you're going to be taking care of children, you have to have this safe environment for them.
Right. But no, I would like to know how much there is, because there's not a whole lot of, it's not a whole lot of backstory to be found, because this is really such a small chapter in Tom Butterfield's life that this movie covers. But he was an associate producer on the movie and moved to LA ostensibly to sort of try to guide this into fruition. So worked toward getting this story told.
Mm-hmm.
So I'd like to think that even though he isn't the screenwriter, that he was there to put the important parts in there and make sure they're told correctly. So fingers crossed on that point.
It didn't seem like there was a lot of info that could be found about Jennifer herself.
Not really. Not from all accounts. She's not very present in the more easily found narratives of this part of his life.
It's that even when you Google the Butterfield Ranch, it doesn't come up right away.
Mm-mm.
You have to kind of go searching for it just a little bit. Because I believe, is it just like a Missouri-based company?
It's Missouri-based. They wound up with 4 branches of it all within a distance of this community where it started. And then recently they were bought. So they are still running, but they are not under the same name or ownership as they once were. Mm-hmm. And then, yeah, Tom Butterfield himself died very shortly after this movie's release from pneumonia. He was only 42.
Yeah.
when he passed.
Yeah, but I think he leaves a really nice legacy behind him of really just caring for the people in his home state. Yeah, just very touching to learn about this guy. Yeah, really very, really amazing what he did when you think about it.
Yeah.
At such a young age. And this, in terms of Michelle herself, this was, like we talked about, it was like one of her last TV movie before signing on to kind of starring roles in films. Yeah. She switched agents, right?
She did. So her agent had booked her 3 TV movies from this period, which were Callie and Son, the TV remake of Splendor in the Grass, and then this one.
Mm-hmm.
And she switched agents after this one, and then immediately went on that audition we talked about for Grease 2 with her new representation.
And the rest is history.
Yeah. Because even the reason that she has brought this movie up, why she remembers it, is because of how pigeonholed she was for her television career. And I feel like we could even lump Hollywood Nights and Falling in Love Again in this as well, is that she just got cast to be pretty and sexy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, her very first credit is as pretty, sort of dippy goddess on Fantasy Island, mm-hmm. ogling over Robert Morse of all people. Why? And then get
the biggest role of her career, the right. biggest challenge of her career, I think.
And then goes into the Delta House, which was the TV spinoff, if you will, of Animal House, where she has no name. She's just the bombshell and is just there to be pretty and blonde. And then like the TV movies of this year, Callie and Son, she's pretty trashy daughter-in-law. Splendor in the Grass, she's the, I can't remember who played it, but it's the Warren Beatty character from the original, plays his promiscuous sister.
Mm-hmm.
And then she gets this one. And she said this one stands out to her in her head because this was the first audition she went on where there was no expectation for her to be pretty. And she took this one because, as we've said multiple times, when she was still sort of earning her licks in this business, with the minimal options open to her, she always wanted to be grabbing something that was different. And this was different.
Yeah. It's funny, even though the part itself couldn't be more generic. Yeah, it's a way for her to transcend the stereotype a little bit, maybe give a little bit more than what she's given so far in her career. Just give, see if she can find a little bit. Oh, I don't know how to say it. I'm thinking of how you said, how, especially with those scenes where she is kind of towards the back half, where every scene is you know, her balancing the books and they're not right. You know, they're not lining up. She attacks it from a different angle every time.
I'm sure for her taking the looks out of the equation, it allows her to build the character from scratch. Mm-hmm. There's no expectations on this one for Jennifer coming in. She's just a really nice girl on campus who falls in love with a guy.
Yeah,
that's as basic as you get, and you get to bring your own inclinations to the acting job.
Yeah, and there's no shot. She's not even described as the most beautiful girl in town. There's no
right.
establishing shot of, you know, va va voom, look at this. She is just, you know, back down to the roots. You know, this is who this girl is, and you get to figure her out for yourself, which is the job of acting, of course. But yeah, you don't she even has a name. She's not even
right.
Like, she's not a bombshell. She's not the sexy party girl. She's not, that would have been different.
Yeah. Just something out of the ordinary. First time she's fairly certain. First time she's playing a real person.
Mm-hmm.
By all accounts. So yeah, just something different. And I think this one, like we said, you see enough of the flashes of her talent that she really hones in later roles through this one. Some of the stuff we've really fallen in love with, for example, her motherly instincts. You get to see the genesis of that. And that's pretty fucking cool.
Yeah. Anything else that we want to talk about with this one?
I don't think so. I mean, no real awards talk for this one, considering the type of movie it is. And we'll have more TV awards to discuss when we get to Wizard of Lies, but
true,
pretty bare on this one. Yeah, I think I'm good on this one. Although I'm glad we added this one to the lineup. This was sort of a late entry that we decided on, so we didn't have just one TV appearance to talk about. So I'm glad this one got on the list.
Me too. I think it was the better one to go with than maybe some of the other TV movies.
And this is what everyone called her first leading role.
Yeah.
So another good one, because Callie Ann's Son and Splendor in the Grass were both supporting roles. So this was the first sort of entry into leading lady territory for her, which obviously keeps going.
Yeah, I'm glad we did add this to the list. It's on YouTube.
Mm-hmm.
However long it'll stay on YouTube. So if anybody is interested in checking it out, it's there. I would maybe say only for if you really want to dig deep into the, you know, where it all started.
Yeah, this is a completionist watch, because I think it's a story worth telling and worth watching, but we have put forth the caveats for why it's not necessarily TV movie greatness. Although for 5 seconds, you get to see a very, very young Megan Mullally as well.
And I missed her. I didn't even see her. I remember that she was in it, but then I was like, oh yeah, she was in this, but I didn't even clock her.
She is the girl that Dwayne is hitting on at the carnival.
Okay.
In the orange top. That is baby 1981 Megan Mullally. So yeah, but I would agree with you. This is a completionist watch, not one you need to throw on with any urgency.
So I guess if we have no more thoughts on the children that nobody wanted, is it 6 degrees time?
I believe it is 6 degrees time.
All right. So 6 degrees of Michelle Pfeiffer is the game we play to wrap up every episode, where we each give each other the name of an actor or an actress and have to connect them to Michelle's filmography in 6 people or less. Jerry, would you like to give or receive first?
I will receive first this time.
Okay. Mine for you is Maggie Gyllenhaal.
Okay. Michelle is in Wolf with James Spader, who is in Secretary with Maggie Gyllenhaal.
There's also, I realized today, I was like, oh yeah, she was also in Crazy Heart. Yeah, it's like, oh yeah, you can do a lot of just one and dones with her.
Yeah, I don't know why. Normally when a movie first pops in my head, there's not any apparent connection, but this popped in my head as Secretary, and I was just like, oh, there we go.
Good.
Found it. Mine for you today is Amy Ryan.
Ooh, okay. I am pretty sure she is in this movie. Like 99.9% sure this is her. But Amy Ryan is in Changeling with Angelina Jolie. And Angelina Jolie is in Maleficent, Mistress of Evil with Michelle.
Hold on, I've only watched Changeling once for very obvious reasons. But you are correct. She is Carol Dexter in Changeling. So well done, my friend.
I love that Angelina's like friends within the mental hospital.
I am proud of you for remembering that.
I pulled that one out of my whole ass. I can't even. There are so many other movies that I could have thought of, but I was like, oh, no, wait. She's in a Clint Eastwood movie from 2008.
Like, I expected you to maybe remember she's in Birdman. Like, that was a one-off no. You were just like, it's Changeling, motherfucker.
Birdman. That's amazing. Wow. Well, Pfeiffer fans, this has been another episode of Pfeiffer Fridays. These 6 degrees, there's a boop.
Hey, as we said, if we have not learned by episode 48 what the connections are, we have not done our job properly.
So my name is Michael McLean, and you can find me on Twitter, Instagram, and Letterboxd at Michael D. McLean.
And I am Jerry Downey, and you can follow me on Twitter and Letterboxd at JerryDowney913.
Please remember to rate and review us on Apple Podcasts. It makes us easier to find so we can continue to spread the Michelle gospel. You can also find updates about the podcast on Twitter and Instagram at Pfeiffer Fridays. Thank you for joining us, and we will see you again next week for Pfeiffer Fridays.
Jennifer, I'm doing the best I can. I'm working every minute I'm not in class, and all I'm asking from you is a little support.
Support? I scrub floors. I darn socks. I give haircuts. I help the boys with their studies. I do term papers for you. I'm the only 19-year-old girl in this country with 9 boys. And one of them's 16 years old. Tom, it's not my fault you got yourself in over your head.
In over my head?
That's what I said, in over your head.